Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. The professor, I don't teach anybody. Dr. Alan Shartuck is here, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and Professor Emeritus in many, many places. Rosemary Armeo, head of the journalism program at UAlbany, an investigative journalist. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Here we are. How about that? We're going to talk about media issues of the week. We probably ought to start with the first time that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have been on the same stage as candidates, not at the same time, of course. That would be the Commander-in-Chief Forum sponsored by NBC News. The reason we talk about that is not because of the candidates themselves so much as the performance that has been roundly criticized of the moderator, Matt Lauer.
He was awful. Oh my goodness, awful? I can't use the words I want to on this program. The complaints began coming in as he was speaking and his motivation. Lauer is a supporter and has been connected in the past with the Clinton Foundation. So the most charitable thing I can say is perhaps he was overcompensating. But he was much tougher on Hillary than he was on Trump, who, for one example that's been talked about endlessly, again repeated the lie that he never supported the Iraq War. Lauer just let that much debunked thing. Just let it go. Didn't say anything like, oh, there's some dispute about that. He spent more than one third of Hillary's time on emails, which really are not connected except indirectly to national security. The questions, if you look at them written out as I have, they were much tougher on Hillary Clinton than they were on Trump, although all of them were like Today Show things. Why was he the moderator of that? And then finally, I would say that it's very evident that he kept interrupting Hillary Clinton, which is just a rude thing. And I don't know if the men on the panel will agree with this, but it's very evident to women. He kept saying over and over again, move it on as quick as you can. Let me interrupt here. And he did not do that to Trump.
And a lot of the Trump embarrassing questions weren't asked. You know, I mean, the things that people have been saying for a long time. Lauer comes back to the email and the questions from the audience that he chose are coming back around the email. But, you know, where's the income tax? Where's all the rest of that stuff?
Yeah, if you're going to bring up emails, then you should bring up the soft bribery to the attorney general in Florida that Trump is in the middle of, or the income tax. You're absolutely right.
Well, but this was a forum on Commander-in-Chief. It's supposed to be national security issues. And that, I think, is the great omission in terms of questioning Trump, the notion of how his actions and words in national security matters might have affected the United States if he had been president when he said such things. Some of the comments from people, Nick Kristof, the New York Times columnist, the NBC Citizens Forum feels like an embarrassment to journalism. Bill Gruskin of Columbia Journalism School, formerly Wall Street Journal, this is a masterclass in bad interviewing. John Montorio, the NBC Forum, is a very bad night for journalism. You know, one of the things you point out, why was he selected? This shows why it matters who a network executive is. Yeah. This man should not have been the one chosen to do this job.
You know, I want to dispute this thing about it's a bad night for journalism, because being one of these commentators or the moderator in the debates even more is partly journalism. It's partly performance. It's presentation. It's having the presence to ask questions and do follow-up on the fly under a lot of pressure. And I think that's why Matt Lauer must have gotten a job, because the Today Show is about sit down, have an intimate little conversation, and Lauer has done good interviews in the past, but he really blew it. And the thing that's offensive to a lot of women, of course, is that you have this big misogynist running against the first female candidate, serious candidate, and there are no women asking questions. There are no women moderators. Where's Rachel Maddow? Where's Megyn Kelly? Why wasn't Matt Lauer of all people?
Well, we know why it was. It's an NBC program They say, we want our guy.
NBC has women
commentators. Yeah, no, I know. But they say, we want our guy there doing this.
There's only one, but there is one moderator, right?
Correct.
Well, so it has to be either a man or a woman.
No,
so you're saying it had to be a woman.
I'm sorry. Let me clarify that. It's the commander-in-chief presentation, and then we have three presidential or two, one's a vice president. So I'm talking about a group of four people, and out of that, they are all men except for one woman who doesn't go it alone. She's a co-moderator. None of the men needed a woman minder. It's very offensive.
Let me just say that I thought the importance of this thing last night was that it gave us an idea as to what we could look for in the debates. Now, the debates, we've been hearing from a lot of Hillary people for a long time now. She's going to kill them in the debates. I don't think so.
I agree with you. I think this
proves it, that, in fact, he'll stand up there, he'll bluster, he'll say something that isn't true, and he'll get away with it.
You know, Alan, this may be more a topic for the roundtable than media, but I agree with you. And it, in the follow-up on CNN, which I turned on by mistake, I'm actually boycotting CNN, but I had it on
by mistake.
I didn't realize who it was until Fareed Zakaria came on. But Fareed goes, you know, we've been talking about this was at the end. Yeah. We've been talking about the discussion tonight for 15 minutes, and that's our first mention of Hillary Clinton. It's amazing what a media hog Trump is. We just can't end our fascination with usually the bizarre things he's saying, but he does get a lot of airtime.
And so what can you do about that? If you're a journalist and you recognize that he dominates the news cycle over and over and over, this has been going on for more than a year, how do you deal with that because he says outrageous things, those are newsworthy, aren't they?
Matt Lauer did not. He's not a Chris Matthews, if you're going to put a... Ah. Chris Matthews did do it, and Anderson Cooper has gotten better, but he is a difficult interview subject.
Let's just remember that when these interviews take place, Hillary Clinton says, okay, today I'm going to give a policy paper on mental health. Now, Rex, you're the editor. At the same time...
Sorry, I was sleeping. Yeah.
You were sleeping? You didn't like my question?
No, I knew what you were getting at. I'm falling asleep at the notion of a policy paper,
right? Yeah, exactly. Okay, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. And those are just sound effects for your presentation.
No, thank you for that. And now you have a major reporter. Should the reporter go hear Trump tell another whopper, or should the reporter go to hear the policy paper on mental health? Now, there will be many people listening right now who will say, well, mental health is very important, and it is. Nevertheless, newspaper sales, that 24-hour cable station that you won't watch, Rosemary and others, they're making this very decision I'm talking about all the time.
And business is very good, as has been repeatedly pointed out. But, you know, some of this has to go on the news consumers, not just the news producers. It's really hard to ignore Trump, and we don't. But it's not like we're ignoring Hillary. There's lots of stuff out on her. If you just go look for it, media use is different now than when I was a kid. And there's more than just the newspaper and the TV shows twice a day, the news shows twice a day. You got to go online. You got to look for your person. You have to parse the information. And consumers don't do that, I don't
think.
That's
correct.
Not enough of them.
Well, a very small, minute part of consumers do that.
But the problem is then we have to figure out a way to reach them. We have to do something to draw the attention of consumers. We can't just say, well, it's your fault, get better, because we need to develop new modes of journalistic storytelling that reach, let's say, the lazy consumer. I think that has to do with clear, short writing with visuals. It has to do with presentation that really is, you know what, it probably has to do with having to have articulated points of view in your presentation, because...
What does that mean?
Well, opinions.
Opinions.
Okay, here's the headline. Hillary calls for more mental health clinics. I mean, is that going to get your dissipated
audience? What if you had Billy Crystal and the Dallas Morning News, both of which have done Trump stories this week, what if they both said, ignored, there's an important mental health initiative by Hillary Clinton this week, let's pay attention to it, both parties?
No, you know what?
You know, something like that.
You know what?
Well, okay, then on the other hand, there's the John Oliver, John Stewart way, which is you handle the stuff with humor and make it entertainment, and they still get their points across. Stephen Colbert still has the best rant against Citizen United. It's not a rant. It was a wonderful explanation of it.
Yeah.
And that was done with funny clips and humor, and maybe that's what we have to do.
And how do you convince people who have no concern about any of it, who say, hey, I like the guy, I like the guy, I'm not going to... I'm not going to change.
Well, you go back to the schools, of course, but that's a long-term solution.
You've done that for years. Very well, Rex. You've been talking about, you know, training students.
News literacy, but it is actually, it's even beyond that. It's training for critical thinking. It's teaching people why they need to read and not just pick up video games. And I have to say, as a longtime, career-long advocate of fair journalism, what people call the journalism of verification and so on, I am a little concerned that I'm beginning to think that maybe we're barking up the wrong tree, that maybe we have to give in and do what the UK has done and just let your journalism become more opinion-based.
Wow. I'm working on a presentation for TEDx in Schenectady about the impact of this election, regardless of who wins. And that is a major one on the press. I think that we are just trying to figure out what happens when fact-checking doesn't work. By the way, when did fact-checking get separated from reporting?
Right.
That ought to concern us right there.
Yeah.
And this use of opinion rather than, no, people say they want just the facts, but they don't read just the facts. They want directed, smart opinion that's backed up.
Okay, so what I haven't heard this morning from either of you or from me is what the answer is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can have more opinion pieces, that's fine. But I still come down to the dilemma of a guy who some newspapers, Daily News, have called a clown, getting up there and saying anything he wants and saying, hey, golly gee whiz, as you say, Martha, look at what he's doing this time. And they say, I can't wait to see him the next time.
Actually, I think maybe you're evoking the Daily News as an interesting point, because the New York Daily News has decided to use its front page as a key to luring social media. Mm-hmm. They have turned it into basically a slide that can be shared, and it is very successful. They're getting a lot of attention to their front pages. And maybe those kinds of, and they're opinionated. They repeatedly show Trump with a bulbous round nose on and call him a clown and worse. And maybe that kind of thing is the presentation. Listen, I'm not going to do this with the Times Union, mind you.
And you know why? And you know why they're doing it? They're doing it because they had no choice. Because they really were willing to sell that newspaper at one point for a dollar. Mm-hmm. And they got somebody who came in and said, okay, you really want to make hay, this is the way to do it.
I don't think it's a media solution. I think it's a political solution that stops this. And we saw it with the Democratic Party this year. Superdelegates worked. It stopped an extreme candidate from getting in and getting the nomination. And that protected the Democratic Party from what happened in the Republicans, which Trump swept. There's a certain base in this country, 30%, I would say, that's going to ignore the press. It's going to ignore what elders, sage elders, if you will, the political establishment
ignore
is
the facts.
New. Or the facts, or fact-checking. They say, we know he's saying that. We don't care. There's no way to get around that. But the political party did inoculate itself against that this year. And I'm sorry, I know superdelegates is a bad word right now,
no.
And we may reform it, but it worked.
Yeah, I'm not a political scientist, though I play one on the radio. But I think superdelegates are actually a very smart idea.
Yes, you have people of influence.
And so do I.
You know, they have outside influence, but why should they not? They are the party elders. They care the most about the party.
And they're elected in the most cases.
Yeah, and they've spent years at this. They didn't come in at the last minute. Sorry, Bernie Sanders supporters, but he's not a Democrat. He did not have the best interests of the Democratic Party at heart. So why is that bad?
Well,
don't expect me to answer.
But this is the media project, so we're talking about what the media can do. There's a limit to what the media can do. It's a lot, but there is a limit. We don't work in isolation other institutions.
I'm sorry, Rosemary, but let's remember that the media is abhorred by a good deal of the American people.
Right, along with other institutions.
Yes,
you know,
it is not,
journalists are not as far down on the list as, for example, we're ahead of bankers, lawyers.
Congressmen,
auto dealers.
Nevertheless, you people are way down.
Aha! Us people!
I did that on purpose. Are way down on the list.
Okay, let me ask you this, Alan.
Yes.
Name me one institution that is not suffering a lack of confidence.
Well, I think public radio.
Oh, please.
You said one.
Oh, my gosh. How do you go from there? I mean, what we're truly in a change in eras. We have left the industrial era, and we're now in the age of information. Whenever you have these giant shifts in timing, in everything, then all the institutions get out of whack. The church isn't as powerful as it once was. Government is not. Education. Schools. We used to love our schools. Now all we do is criticize them. there is no institution I can think of that is still held in high regard as it was, say, in 1900.
So what are you saying here? That because the media is held in such disrespect, and you guys always make this argument, I hate it when you do it, that, you know, two wrongs make a right, or he's worse than we are, that kind of thing. That doesn't really answer my question.
Actually, I hear you use that argument whenever we make a good point. You go, two wrongs don't make a right. What I'm saying is that it's unfortunate that the media is not considered as highly as we once were. But it's to be expected, and all we have to do is keep on moving forward. And we need to examine ourselves, as I think we do. There's like this frenzy to figure out what we did wrong with Trump. And we did do wrong. We've done a terrible job with him. We don't know exactly why, because he's an unusual candidate.
Nor do you know what to do about it. In other words, people
we'll figure it out.
That's why we're sitting here in this show. We're doing exactly that.
That's right, Rex. Mm-hmm. But why are you giving so much attention to Trump? We hear it almost every day. Or why don't you never talk about Trump? Because he doesn't deserve to be talked about. He's running for president of the United States. And you know this, Rosemary. And they're running us letters every day on our roundtable program here at WMC saying, don't talk about Trump.
And yet if you don't, people don't write. You've made this point before that this is what makes people call and talk about this. People are excited about it. So what gets our attention gets us. And it does.
But of course, the last thing that should be said about this is in the latest polling, Trump is either leading or equal to Hillary.
Well, polls, schmolls. It depends
But look, there are a lot of people in this country who are convinced by this. That's the whole point.
Well, the media didn't do that. The media is not the sole institution that built up Donald Trump. I find it ironic that a year ago when I was writing a blog for the Times Union, I considered and did a lot of research for a column on why don't we just stop writing about Donald Trump? He's insignificant. And I laugh about that now. I didn't do it for why I found a lot of reasons we should be covering it.
What, you're not blogging for the Times Union?
I'm not anymore, no.
Why?
Well, because I'm doing some other things, Alan.
Well, there's always possibility. Look at me. I can do
nothing
to it. You have
a
staff of minions.
No, they don't write my columns for me. Don't kid yourself.
They do all the other stuff, though, that I have to do in addition.
Brew
your own coffee.
That's a good coffee maker in this WAMC. If you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. You can share your views by writing to us, media@wamc.org. And we do appreciate it. If you want to send along articles that you see or your thoughts, we will take advantage of them. One of those was a piece written by Ron Fournier, a longtime journalist. He was the chief Washington correspondent, I think, for the AP, went to the National Journal, had a number of things. So he is now leaving reporting once again. And I don't know what he's going to do. I can't remember. But he's written a farewell guide to political journalism that just has some interesting thoughts, I think, about offering advice for journalists. And the notion of why it's important to mention here is because it gives people some insight into how we do our jobs. And one of the things that I liked is don't hesitate to hurt a source. That is, you need to be tough enough to write and take a shot, a fair shot, at even the people who are your very best quiet sources.
You know, that's a very interesting one. We all face that, let's face it. Nevertheless, if you're writing opinion pieces, as I do, two a week, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, look, Andrew Cuomo doesn't like what I'm writing about him, and all of a sudden his guy starts to use social media against me. He tweets that I'm a revisionist historian. It's one of my favorite things that I have ever had, you know, written. If that's the best they could do, that's really something.
But the peril is this.
But I don't need Andrew Cuomo is my point.
Well, is that true? I mean, he probably doesn't call you anymore, right? Because you've said so many mean things about him. Actually, I probably shouldn't ask that. He may be your secret source.
Yes.
I shouldn't.
No.
It's none of my business whether he calls
him. No, he's never really called me. His father and I, as you know, had a radio show together for many, many years. But yes, there were entreaties made to me to do what I did with the father with Andrew. And I said no. I wasn't going to do it. And the result has been that he doesn't talk to me. And I don't care. Hmm. People say, aren't you worried that he won't talk to you? No. I can read the papers as well as anybody else, and I can give my opinions as well as anybody else.
But you have developed sources, and we all try to do this. This is one of Ron Fournier's points. You develop sources by building relationships, he says. I mean, I often tell reporters, take more time for a honeymoon when you get a new job. I've never done this as well as I've intended to in any job that I've gotten, mm-hmm. including this one, which is when you start a new job, go out and meet people instead of plunging into things and starting to write stories. As he says, he likens it to the rituals of dating. He says, you know, call or email all the people on your beat who the audience needs to know. Invite them for coffee or lunch. Keep lists. Keep calling. Keep conversation informal and so on. What are the hobbies? You really get to know the people who are going to provide the information that you need to have.
And then when you slam them, they're going to say what?
Well, what you have to do, actually, some of our people are very good at this. Our investigations editor, Brendan Lyons, for example, is very good about telling people in advance, here's what this story is going to say, and you're not going to like it. And the people who are hit by his stories always know what's coming. But, you know, he's fair. He's accurate.
I should point out that this piece that you're talking to, A Farewell Guide, will be used in journalism schools, and it's being widely read among journalists. But if you read the comments that followed this from the public, they were uniformly scathing and nasty, like, oh, follow your own advice. And
right.
It's too bad you don't practice what you preach.
I was thinking it was
awful.
I was thinking that it was a great piece for the 1950s.
Huh.
You know, there were so many. This is conventional wisdom that we have always always given in our journalism schools.
70s, perhaps. 50s, journalists were still on the payroll of politicians.
Somewhat.
It felt really dated to me. There's nothing in here about branding, about politicians who ignore you and go right to social media. There's nothing in here about press conferences. Why are press conferences suddenly all so important?
I didn't see the all-important one about not sleeping with your sources.
Gosh, do we have to write that?
We wrote everything else that was obvious.
There is actually quite a lot of that, especially in Washington. You know, there are entire lists of journalists and politicians who are
giving
cohabiting.
Giving new meaning to the concept of covering your source.
Really? What can
Speaking
you do?
Speaking of sex, talk about Roger Ailes.
Gretchen Carlson gets $20 million. Roger Ailes gets $40 million golden parachute. You know, so far it's cost Fox News maybe $60, $65 million.
Drop in the bucket.
Drop in the bucket, is that right?
Of course.
Big deal. Gretchen Carlson has now settled her lawsuit against Fox News for sexual harassment. But the what is interesting, too, is this is not over. We see the departure of Greta Van Susteren, and that seems to have something to do with this.
I have no doubt about it. One can only use conjecture. My conjecture is this is the Murdoch Empire is all about the kids taking over. And the kids, we have been told again and again, didn't like Ailes. Now we have to understand that Ailes had certain allies, and one in one makes two. So if you watch certain departures, you say, well, isn't this possible? This is the fallout because Van Susteren.
I think Greta left because she lost her ally, and I think Bill O'Reilly could be the next to retire. It's the breakup of the Murdoch Empire. To me, it's amazing this went on so long and appears to have been hideously toxic.
I don't think we're in disagreement about this.
We are. We'll find out. I think Greta's going to end up in court suing for wrongful termination or something like that.
Really?
I think so.
No, well, you're saying Greta, not
Greta,
Gretchen.
Not Gretchen.
Greta Van Susteren.
Oh, yeah.
For
they're,
Gretchen?
They're awfully close over there.
I applaud.
Well, they're all blonde, you
they're
know.
They're all blonde and leggy and intellectually not.
It's like Trump's favorite. I mean, why do you think? Oh.
I know.
They're all grrrrrrs. Gretchen, yeah.
Well, Gretchen Carlson, boy, applause to her. Long before she was ousted, which everyone has said, oh, she was ousted, bad sport, now she sued. Long before that, she began secretly taping Ailes and has on tape his hideous comments and advances. So that's why she got in 2 weeks. Well, no, I'm sorry, 2 months after she filed, she gets an amazing settlement. It's not just the $20 million. Some women are unhappy that she got 20 and Ailes got 40. But of course, we know it has more to do than settling wrongs with Ailes. It has to do with all his years of service. Da da da.
Oh, and keeping
$20 million's nice.
And keeping him close.
But Gretchen got $20 million and an apology, which just so rarely happens in these cases. And she brought him down. She did good. She did really well.
Good for America.
Yep.
Good for Gretchen. Good for America.
It's good for women. I'm sorry. This sort of stuff. I think it was an especially bad case at Fox, but this is not unusual. Any woman in business knows of stories, at least. If it didn't happen to them, it happened to someone they know.
All right. On that point, then, we will let the Media Project slide off into obscurity for another week. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith, thank you all for joining
us. Popular programs.
We'll see you next week, we hope.
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go. to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.